Hi, I'm Wendell. I'm learning to live loved by God. I'm recovering from spiritual and emotional abuse, mostly at the hand of organized religion, just be honest about it. And I've been addicted to, well, I'm still struggling with addiction to food. I know it doesn't show, but it's true. Yes, my dirty little secret. Nobody knows. And work, I'm not sure if I'm addicted to work or if I just like it. I don't know yet. That's probably denial. And issues with control. I've had issues with porn and alcohol and panic attacks and bouts with depression and actually fits of rage in the past. So that's who I am. Yeah, I'm a hot mess. So I'm going to apologize up front, but I'm really not going to apologize. We're going to revisit the story of the Good Father again. I know we spent weeks there. The workbook has been written. We're almost finished with the small group studies on that story. But for those of you who are new, the story that we usually call the prodigal son really has very little to do with the son. It has everything to do with the Good Father in the story. That's the focus. I think it's been misdubbed as the story of the prodigal son. So Megan and I were talking, we had lunch Wednesday, one day this week, and we were talking about it, and Robbie and I have been talking about it, and I've been jarring with some other people about it. And there's just some stuff in that story that's just, that won't leave me alone. Most of us have got children involved in our lives. Well, we all do in some way, because we've all been children. Some of us have children. Some of us have already raised our children. Some of us will have children. Some of us have grandchildren. But all of us, in some way, it can identify with being a child. And we can also identify, those of us who've been here for a while, that when you get in recovery and stay here for a while, it's inevitable that you begin to connect the dots with your current struggles, issues, pain, hurt, memories, damaged memories, whatever, damaged emotions. The stuff you deal with today can be directly connected with your upbringing. And some of us had super great parents, and some of us had shitty parents. We just, you know, we've had, there are aughts all over the map of what kind of parents we've had. But there is no such thing on the planet as a perfect parent. There is no such thing. Oh, my parents were perfect. I'm sorry. Were you a perfect parent? No, well, you know, there's never been any such thing as a perfect parent. And so we grow up being told things that aren't true, being treated in such ways that make us think we're a certain way when really we're another. Things are withheld, things are piled on, things are said, not said, done, not done. I mean, just, you know, all the way from abuse to neglect to, and we don't need to go that. We're a recovery ministry, so we deal with this week after week after week after week. So we know the lingo. We know that's part of our story, and we all tell that part of our story. So I'm looking at this story of what we call the prodigal son, which we've changed to the good father. I'm looking at this story, and we have two sons that went very far off track. We have one son who says, I don't think you love me the way I want to be loved, so give me my piece of the pie so I can go out and love myself the way I want to. Anything I want, I can buy. Because every now and then, I know you love me, but every now and then I ask you for something and you don't give it. You withhold it, which feels like you don't love me when you do that. He didn't realize, you know, that not allowing him to handle poisonous snakes and, you know, play out on a busy highway was out of love. To me, it seems like you're confining me, you're not being fair to me. So you don't tell me yes every time I ask. So if you'll fund me, I know you're that good of a dad, you're going to fund me. So if you'll fund me, I'm going to go have an adventure of what it's like to love myself, because I think I can love me better than you love me. So here I go. The other son is like, no matter what I do, I'm not good enough for him. So I got to work harder. He imagines commands from his father that are not commands. He begins to see his dad as a slave driver. So he works harder. He works longer. He gives more attention to perfection. You got it. Like all good Christians do, we work harder and harder and harder to try to gain the grace and the love that's already ours. But we work on it. We work on self-improvement. We work on earning the right to be worthy to be noticed, to be acknowledged. And we're even brought up, most of us are brought up this way if we're brought up in church. I was. You're never good enough. You got to be a little bit better for God. So that's the older son. And so the whole time, he's thinking he doesn't have his dad's approval. He does. He's got everything. The dad tells him, it's all yours. But in his mind, he's not hearing what he wants to hear or what he thinks he needs to hear. And so he's getting this little hissy fit built up. And he's mumbling under his breath, boy, if I had a chance, I would just unload on him on how I really feel. Well, the dad knows this. He's not stupid. He knows that this is building up, and so the party starts happening for the return son, and he goes out to the older son and says, dude, what's the deal? Knowing that he's pulled the pin on the grenade, you know. So boom, I mean, he knew the guy was going to blow up. His son was going to blow up. So sure enough, he did. He blew up, which we think is horrid because in this story, the father is the God rep, right? That's who God, that he's God in the story, and the sons are us. You don't ever blow up at God. God provided the situation for him to blow up. I know you're going to blow up. I want you to. You need to. We were in a group Thursday night, a men's group, and I said, I won't name your name, but I want to quote you if you'll let me. He said, fine. Because we were talking about this very thing about the older son blowing up at his dad. And we were talking about it in the context of prayer. Of when we talk to God and we actually blow up at him. We actually lose our temper with God. And he shared in group, he said, I never learned how to pray until I got angry with God. Then I learned how to pray. Because everything else was, now I lay me down to sleep. I pray the Lord my soul to keep. Or God is good, God is great, and we thank him for the, however, God is great, God is good, and we thank him for, you know, all the memorized. Our Father, which art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, blah, blah, blah. All the memorized prayers, that is not really prayer. And so there was never honest communication between the father and the older son until the dad pressed him. He didn't really, well, he kind of pressed him until he went outside and gave him opportunity. Finally, after all these years, an honest conversation between the father and the son. All based on anger, which most religion will tell you is illegal, but that is exactly what the father wanted. I want you to tell me how you really feel so that we can go from here. This is our starting point for a new relationship, a new way to do relationship. But in both of these cases, we have a son who goes crazy and goes out wandering and spends all his money. We got another son who's seething in rage for most of his life until the father intercedes. Raised by a perfect father. The dad never made one mistake in his parenting. And yet both of these boys got it wrong. Can I talk about our conversation a little bit? So Megan has two little kids. And she's concerned, as most young parents are, that I don't want to mess up my kids. I mean, what parent does not have those thoughts? You know, I don't want to mess up my kids. And I told her, I said, Megan, you will. you will. But think about this in the context of parenting, in the context of being a parent or being a child raised by imperfect parents, there is a responsibility to love your children the best you know how. There's no question about that. But for us as parents to think that we have to be perfect or our kids are going to get messed up is just bogus. Because this father was perfect and both sons wound up messed up. Both of them wound up screwed up in their thinking. So I'll repeat what we've said over and over. I got from Larry Sensing. I did not think this up. He told it to me. In the parenting role, I mean, I know we probably have a few parents here tonight. In the parenting role, I am not, this is so important. I am not responsible for my children growing up to be perfect. I am responsible in the role as a parent. I'm not responsible for, I'm responsible in. There is a huge difference. I mean, when you think about your job, you think about whatever you do, you're not responsible for that. You're responsible to be the best person you can be in that situation. That's as far as it goes. So even a perfect father raised imperfect kids. Okay, so that was all just the intro. So now we had to ask the question, How did that happen? How did that happen? My old religion would tell me it's because humans are sinful. They're innately sinful and evil and bad. That was drilled into me growing up. It probably was you too. Just the depravity of human nature. Maybe. Maybe. But the longer I've gone in recovery, I've been in here 15 years, and the longer I've gone in recovery, I think I've come up with at least another option, an alternative answer to that question. So why did a perfect parent raise two sons who turned out pretty messed up? And I think it's this. I think that humans are love skeptics. I want you to remember that term, because that has haunted me all week. And when I post my blog Tuesday morning, that's the name of the blog, Love Skeptics. We are skeptical of love. Adam and Eve, built or created by a perfect father and put in a perfect situation, it is utopia. There is nothing wrong in Eden. Everything is right. Everything is right. And and God said so. When he made everything, he said, it's good, it's good, it's good. When he put Adam and Eve there, he said, it's very good. This is the God of the universe. This is the great big huge God who speaks and there's light and runs his finger across the planet and there's a river or the Grand Canyon or whatever. This is the great big huge God. So he makes these pronouncements and he says, it's good, it's good, it's good. Adam and Eve, it's very good. And then every day he comes and he walks with them in the cool of the garden. I would dig that. Think about that. I would dig that. Being in a perfect utopia and knowing that every day about, you know, whatever, o'clock, he's going to show up. And he's not showing up because it's his job. He's not showing up because he's obligated. He's showing up because he wants to. The God of the universe shows up because he wants to hang out with me. Let your mind wrap around that. He's not punching a time clock. He's showing up because he says, I've waited all day to come and hang out with you. And so he comes and he walks with us, and we have these conversations about, you know, there's this animal over here that's got this unusually long nose and great big ears, and it's fascinating. Got these great big things coming out here, and then we heard this roar, and we went and looked, and there was this, you know, think about the conversations that, and God's just giggling. He's saying, I thought you might like that one. You know, they're having this conversation, and one day, they decided, this is not good enough. We're skeptical of this. They're faced, I don't care whether you want to call it a personal devil, an idea, a phase in their growth. I don't care what you want to call it. If you're stuck on a personal devil doing it, that's great. I'm there with you. But somehow the idea got in it, you can have more. You need to be skeptical of love. You can have something above, more, extra. You can be perfect. You can be like him. Get was you can have love plus. And so they're offered this and they took it. It's just like what happened in the younger son's mind. I could have more than what I have. It's the same thing. Very same thing took place. Love is good. My dad's love is good. He knew his dad's love was good enough that he could actually go to him and ask for his piece of the pie. He already knew his love, dad's love was unbelievably good. What other son would do that in the neighborhood? But I can do that with my dad. But love is not good, not enough. I'm skeptical of it. I think there's more. And so he, in the garden, they asked for more. In this story, they asked for more. And I got to thinking about my track record, my personal track record. And I look around in recovery, and I look around the people I know. All of us are love skeptical. We don't believe that love is enough. You need love and something else. I wrote an article, a blog, way back when I first started writing this blog. And most of you know I'm a Beatles freak. I love the Beatles. And I love their song, All You Need Is Love. All you need, love, love, all you need is love. And I remember when I was a kid and I heard that song, I thought, boy, they're naive. And the longer I've gone, especially when I got in recovery, I thought, no, all you need is love. Not gushy Hollywood love, but real love. Real love that says, I'm going to put your welfare in front of mine. and I'm going to receive your same kind of love back to me. That kind of love. That's real love. That's not the fake, gushy Hollywood love. I wrote that blog, and a childhood friend of mine responded back, well, you know that in the end, everybody but all the Beatles but Paul rescinded that statement. I thought, good grief. Good grief. What a buzzkill. But I still believe all you need is love. I don't live it, but I want to live it. So let's look at some for instances. We look at certain situations that, okay, take somebody you really love, take somebody you really care about, and they're kind of teetering on the edge. They're edging toward self-destruction. Could be substance abuse, could be a career decisions, it could be relational decisions, it's whatever. You know what I'm talking about. You've got people in your life you really care about, young and old, and you, especially when you get a little bit older, it gets more concerning because the stakes are higher. But you see them edging toward some bad choices. You see them edging toward, you know, what you consider to be a precipice. And they finally cross the line. And you think, there's nothing left now. It's hopeless. The dysfunction of that person and the dysfunction of that situation is so powerful and so potent, there's no coming back. Let's get honest, they're beyond the reach of love. I don't know how many times I've said that. I wouldn't say the last statement, but I might as well have. You see what I'm saying? They go so far and they kind of walk off the cliff, and we say, okay, they're past the point of no return. And what I didn't realize until this week is what I was really saying was they're past the point of love. Not even love is going to really, or we'll say, well, all we can do now is just love them. We've thrown everything else against the wall and nothing stuck. Let's throw love against the wall and see if it'll stick. We don't have a lot of hope, but let's just throw it against the wall. So not only are we love skeptics, but we're disrespectful of love. You know, like it's a last resort. Let's just throw it against the wall and see if it sticks. Maybe that's enough on that. I'm not here to shame us. If I am, I'm shaming myself more than anybody else, because I've been through a revolution the last week or two, but as this has dawned on me, I thought, I've lived my whole life as a love skeptic. Now, maybe we'll stay here just a little bit longer. I want to go on and talk about God here in a minute. But you've probably never thought about it this way, so it's going to take you a few minutes to process this. Do you have people in your life who you care about? And if you've got two buckets, okay, and you got to put them in one of the two buckets, you got to sort them. You got a pair of tweezers. Well, turn your binoculars around so they're little bitty, you know, and you can pick them up with your tweezers. And you got to put them in one of two buckets. And the ones that you deem hopeful, I have high hopes for them, you put in one bucket. And the other people, the hopeless people, you put over here in this bucket. I hate the thoughts of even painting that or using that metaphor. But don't we all have people in our lives who are in the hopeless bucket? We've already put them in the hopeless bucket. And I think, I hope to high heaven that God doesn't use that same metaphor. You know what I'm saying? What if God takes that approach with humanity and he says, okay, I have high hopes for these people. These people over here, nah, we're going to stick them in a bucket and that's where they're going to stay. That is a very uncomfortable metaphor. That makes me squirm to think about that would happen in my mind or my heart, but it does. They've already crossed the line. They've already proved to me that they are hopeless or they are worthless or they are beyond the point of redemption or whatever. They've already proved that. And basically what I'm saying is that love can't do anything. Love, they're beyond the reach of love. Love can't change them. Love can't touch them. Love can't do anything. So now I think it's time to take a look at God. Remember how we say in here a lot, we're only as good as our God. and the where we're coming from. We got a lot of new people, so I kind of retrack a little bit. Where we're coming from in pagan Old Testament, you look at some of the gods they worshipped, and they killed their babies and offered them to their gods. I mean, they did terrible, awful things in the name of their gods. They were only as good as their gods. And Yahweh comes along with his people, and he says, we don't do things that way. And he called them to be, you know, to a higher level or a higher, not necessarily an ethical or moral plane, but just we respect humanity more than that. We don't dehumanize people like that. I created humans to love them, not to destroy them or disrespect them that way. So we're only as good as our God. Everybody gets that, right? So when you look at the big story of God, I don't know where religion came up with a lot of the stuff it came up with, but did God really create humanity to be his slaves and work for him like Despicable Me, little minions, you know? We're supposed to be little minions down in the basement working for this big God who has these big plans, and that's why we're here? That's why we were created? The beginning of the story does not start that way. It starts with a parent preparing a nursery for his little kiddos, like you would for your own kids. He's decorating it all right, and he's all giddy. My kids are coming. He does that. And all through the scripture, when you watch him, we're in slavery, and he comes and he gets us out. We're out in the wilderness, and we've been told we were slaves for hundreds of years. We can't think for ourselves. We can't behave right. We can't treat each other nicely. So he says, let me help you. Let me give you some guidelines to help you play with each other well so you don't destroy each other. People say, well, he's a mean taskmaster. Really? When he tells you things that are life-saving, that's a mean taskmaster? That's God simply saying, I'm trying to help you to know how to not self-destruct. And then all down through Scripture, you get to the New Testament, and he says, okay, now it's time. I'm going to become one of you. I'm going to enter into humanity. I mean, we know this story. We've looked at it over and over. And how religion has come up with some kind of idea that this is a mean, demanding, picky, perfectionistic God who's demanding things we can't perform. How did we get that out of that story? Where the whole time God is saying, I just want to love you. I love you as much as you understand. So at this point, I'll understand. I'll love you with guidelines because that's all you understand. Now you've grown up some. I'll love you by becoming one of you because now you get that. And then Jesus literally said, there's something better than me being here. Me going away and my spirit coming and living in you is better. It's an improvement on what we have right now. What was that? So I'll make better workers out of you? Y'all better be better worker bees, you know? We got to get more production out of you. Well, look at the story of the father and the two sons. He didn't care anything about production. He was more about partying and hanging out with his boys. I want to do life with you. I want to experience life with you. And so this idea of God being demanding or being judgmental or being picky, when you read the whole story, it's God creating us out of love and trying to walk with us in love the whole way along. Why? Because he believes in love as his first option, not his last one. He never says, let's throw love against the wall and see if it'll stick. Let's roll the dice and see if it comes up, you know, whatever we want to come up. He's, I love because I believe in it, and I will never stop loving. And if you're expecting me to do something different, I will not unlove you. Period. I won't. You cannot make me unlove you. And so when I look at that and I think, if God is so insistent and so confident about love, why am I so skeptical of it? Why am I so, at times, disrespectful of it? That I want to start living my life that when I love on somebody, I believe that love is going to make a huge impact in their life. Not, well, I hope this works. Well, I haven't got anything else to do, so I'll do this. But, no, I'm going to love them because I believe in my heart of hearts that this will make the greatest, most life-impacting punch in their heart. Boom. They've been loved, and it's going to make a difference. Can you imagine what difference it would make in our parenting, in our marriages, in our work situations and everything, where we say, instead of, well, I'll try loving them. If we say, I will love them, and it's going to make all the difference in the world. This is going to change everything. I am absolutely confident in the words of love I'm about to say. I'm absolutely confident in this act of love I'm about to do. So I'm just telling you where I'm at. I want to change from being a love skeptic to being a love advocate and to have this confidence in the power of love, the same kind of confidence that God has. Because what was the Jesus thing? What was the Holy Spirit thing? That was all about love. And he said, I'm going to go way out on the limb here because that's how strongly I believe in the power of love. I'm all in. All my eggs are in one basket. I'm not diversifying. I'm putting them all in one basket. It's the love basket. So that's where he lives. I don't think I have anything else to say. I just hope there's a few of you who are willing to go way out on this limb with me. I don't want to be out there by myself, but I think we all want to be there. You know, I think that's where we want to be, is where we say I'm all in with love. This is it. This is where I want to go. It's where I want to be. But don't we need rules? But don't we need, you know, this? Don't we need this? Don't we need money? Don't we need anything? No, all you need is love. Try it. All you need is love. And I think everything else will take care of itself as you move along. You know, I think you need organization. I think you do need some guidelines. You know, if you don't all drive on the correct side of the road, you have pileups. If you don't stop at the stop sign, you have a problem. You know, you have guidelines you live by. I'm not saying that. But why do you stop at the stop sign? Because you want to obey the rules, because you love the other drivers on the road. You see what I'm saying? So you just literally start to believe in the power of love. I think I better shut up.